You are Locked On Marlins, your daily podcast on the Miami Marlins. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Marlins podcast, your go-to podcast on all things Miami Marlins. As always, I'm your host, Aram Layton. I'm a longtime Marlins writer, as well as the founder of JustBaseball.com. And in today's episode, we are going to talk about the enigma that is Lewis Brinson. Here we go again. How many times have we gone through this cycle? But is this cycle different? What is Brinson doing to find this success? And is this the longest stretch of success that we have seen from Lewis Brinson? How it's all happening, I'm going to dive into that. And then speaking of success on the minor league level, there's not a player in the Marlins system enjoying more success than Peyton Burdick, who has been red hot. And I mean, that even puts it lightly for how good he has been. I think he's hitting over 500 over the last week. OPS almost at 2,000 over his last five games. He's just been unconscious. I'm going to talk about Burdick because he has made some adjustments. They've also adjusted where they put him in the lineup, and now he's closer to the front, batting first and second, why I think that makes a ton of sense for him, and what he could project for as the Marlins' potential center fielder. I know the Marlins need to look for a center fielder, and I still think you go into next year with a surefire answer at that position, but you have to wonder if Burdick finishes this year strong. I'm not saying he hits 500 the rest of the year, but if he continues to swing it well, how that factors into the Marlins' decision. And then, of course, you also have Lewis Brinson swinging the bat, too. So this is very interesting. I really don't want either of those things to discourage the Marlins from making a move, and I don't think it will. But it is something that is worth thinking about in terms of if Burdick continues to rake, how does he fit into the equation next year? I think that there's definitely room for him, and it will be interesting to see how he finishes the season. But a lot that I'm encouraged on from the games that I've been able to watch lately from Peyton Burdick as well. So let's start with Lewis Brinson, the absolute enigma that is Lewis Brinson. Every time we think he's done, every time we think it's totally over, he just comes back with a little flash of light. But this is more than a flash, right? It is definitely the most prolonged stretch and best stretch of success that he has had in the big leagues. There's no disputing that, really. And that's why, I mean, at this point, you got to just let him roll for the rest of the year. But some of the things that are standing out to me in terms of, you can just see the confidence. That's something that you can't really measure. You can definitely see the confidence with Brinson. He looks like he's playing with nothing to lose, finally, as he realized his back's against the wall. I think he's already realized that several times, but having thought that his career with the Marlins was probably over several occasions, as we all did, just to come back and get one more shot, I think he already went through that mourning process almost of assuming that it was over, and now he is getting another chance and playing with the house's money, essentially. That's what it looks like to me, and he looks like that player that we always thought he could be, and I don't know if that's going to be sustainable, but this stretch here is a confident Lewis Brinson that we haven't seen. Beyond that, he is finding success because he's hitting fastballs. He's catching up to fastballs. In the past, he has really struggled because of the length to his swing of being able to just catch up to the heater. This year, he's catching up to the heater. And normally in the past, when he needed to catch up to fastballs, he would cheat and the breaking ball would get him even worse. He's actually doing all right against the breaking ball. I mean, he's not crushing it, but not that many players crush breaking balls anyways. And if you're hitting the fastball, it doesn't matter. He's also hitting the changeup well, so that is a good sign. The reason why Brinson was always having more success against lefties was really because it's harder for them to blow by him and everything's breaking towards him, so he wouldn't have to cheat quite as much. And it's the typical lefty-righty split thing, but more pronounced with a player like Brinson, who has a lot of length to his swing and not the best pitch selection. The pitch selection, in terms of just having the discipline, not chasing, those things, that's still going to be a part of his game. I think he's always going to be a guy, even if he quote-unquote figured it out, that's going to strike out in the upper 20%, which is fine, given the athleticism that he brings and power potential. But what's really different for me this year is that fastball ability, or ability to hit the fastball, where he's hitting 302 against the heater this season. And he's also 6-for-15 off the changeup, which I think is largely a part of his lefty dominance too, where he's able to stay back enough on that changeup and drive it. I mean, I don't think Brinson's struggled as much to stay back unless he's cheating for a fastball. When he is sitting off speed, he's usually fine with that. And I think we're seeing that success. I mean, that's a 400 batting average. He has a home run off the changeup. He has 3 home runs off a fastball and a home run off of a breaking ball. He's still swinging and missing at the breaking ball at a 39% clip. That's fine. I mean, a lot of players have that kind of issue. Not too concerned about it. But a big thing that stands out to me as well, and I think this is part of the reason why he's able to catch up to heaters right now, is that he is much more efficient to the ball. And it's allowing him to, of course, catch up to velo, but also it's allowing his bat path to be more true. It's what the bat path should have always been. I think he was always in and out of the zone, just trying so hard to survive at the plate. Now he has confidence in his stroke, and he's really driving the baseball. His ground ball rate is the lowest we've ever seen it by a good margin in the major leagues. That ground ball rate is at 45%. That is the league average. That's where you want to be. And I would argue that a guy like Brinson, you want him to be at the league average. I know he's a plus runner, but he also still has plus power. He's going to have those mess up rollovers that he'll beat out. And that's the value that you get, and gives him a little bit more wiggle room in terms of just not having as complete of a hit tool, because you know he's always going to be higher in the BABIP category and steal hits here and there, as we see Jazz Chisholm do as well. I want to see him driving the baseball, because at the end of the day, that's how he's going to be a valuable big leaguer, if that's ever going to happen, is if he's hitting home runs or driving the ball gap to gap, and he's doing just that. Dropping the ground ball rate from 52% nearly down to 44.7%, that is a great, great sign. You look at exit velo, highest that it's been in his big league career at 91 miles per hour. That's 3 miles per hour higher than last season and almost 5 miles per hour higher than what it was in 2019. And then maybe the most important part, and this is what really stands out to me right now, is that he's hitting righties just as well as he's hitting lefties. The OPS is actually higher, batting average a little bit lower, but I mean, it's comparable right across the board, every statistic, which is massively important because he was really struggling against righties throughout his career, and we thought maybe his one little niche that he could find in the big leagues was just being able to hit lefties for the reasons I mentioned earlier, but now he's hitting righties. And if you want to realize how good he has been since he got called up, and I'm not trying to sell you on Lewis Brinson, I'm still cautiously optimistic at this point, but the fact that I can even use the word optimistic in the same sentence as Lewis Brinson is kind of wild. I am not planning for next year with Lewis Brinson. I'm not planning for him to be a part of this team's future, but I'm also not ruling it out now, which is weird enough as it is. Like, I am not ruling out him having a pretty prominent role to start the year next year if he continues on this streak that he's on. I'm not sure that this streak will continue. I still have a little bit of concern with the swing and miss. His chase rates are still very high, and I'm not totally sold that his swing is this magically efficient and repeatable stroke now, but it's definitely improved. And when you look at the numbers over the last 60 plate appearances for him, because that's really the last time he got called up, and it's not fair to piece together every little spurt of games he had before that, getting called up and sent down. Over the last 18 games, which is where we've really seen him for the bulk, he has been just demolishing baseballs. 327, 383, 618 slash line. That's a 1,002 OPS. That's a 170 WRC plus, 28% K rate. Man, you can live right there and be a great big leaguer with what Lewis Brinson brings to the table, skills-wise and tools-wise. And he's walking 7% of the time across that stretch. That would be perfect as well. Not the highest walk rate in the world. It'd be just a hair below average, but you take that from Brinson any day of the week. I'm not going to compare him to Byron Buxton, but Buxton lives right around that walking K rate and still finds a way to have success. It's possible, and you don't have to be as explosive as Buxton to have that success. If Brinson's able to walk a bit more, that would be a game changer. That would start to make things look even better, because that would offset some of my concern around the hit tool. But I mean, the numbers over that stretch are pretty absurd, and they're hard to deny. They're hard to deny. I know he went to Coors, but I mean, overall, to have a WRC plus right now this season of 111 in his 46 games this year, just to put that in perspective, if you combine his WRC plus, and I mean literally combine the total from each season, so in 2017, he had a 31 WRC plus. In 2018, he had a 56 WRC plus. In 2019, he had a 29 WRC plus. that would still put you below what he has in this season. You could combine the WRC plus for three seasons and it would still be lower. He has a positive WAR according to Fangraphs for the first time ever. We've never seen that either from Lewis Brinson. So there's a lot of things that we have not seen before, which is really, really crazy. The isolated power at 203, also very, very nuts. So this is interesting, and I think it makes the season a lot more fun. I will say that, because think about this. There is very little to be excited about with this team, obviously, and until they call up the Burdicks and Conines of the world, or even a Bryson Brigman would get me excited at this point, you're looking at some players that maybe aren't a big part of the future. Yeah, it's fun to see De La Cruz, but I don't think you're really counting on him to be more than a fourth outfielder. Yeah, I'm enjoying seeing Alex Jackson play and seeing if the Marlins may have a little bit of a piece there, but I'm not really holding my hat on that either. But the Brinson storyline and just seeing how he finishes here to see if he can continue this improbable run, it makes it a lot more interesting. I'll say that. So I think it's good. I'm really happy for Lewis Brinson. He deserves to have this stretch here, this enjoyable time on the baseball field, because you can imagine baseball is not fun when you struggle. I mean, it is the most miserable thing on earth when you're struggling, and you can imagine all of the pressure that he has had over the last few years. So I'm glad that in this environment now, he's enjoying some moderate success. I mean, right now it's more than moderate success, but on the large scale, it's still a small stretch here, but the largest stretch at the same time that we have seen him have success. And one last thing to put it in perspective statistically, you look at Marlins players currently on the roster that have an OPS over 750, and the answer is Jesus Aguilar. You also have Garrett Cooper, who's out for season, the third player with at least 120 plate appearances and an OPS over 750 is Lewis Brinson. Not even Miggy Rose there yet. I think he will get there. I think he's at like 740 something. But still, there's three players, and it's the objectively two best offensive players in the Marlins and Lewis Brinson. That's pretty wild there too. So we'll see how this continues. Happy for Sweet Lou, and I hope he can just continue to make this happen and just make things weird. Why not? I mean, why not make things weird? It's already been a weird enough year. Let's just have some fun. But on the backside of this break here, I'm going to talk about Miguel Rojas and why he is maybe one of the most underrated players in baseball, and then a little bit on Peyton Burdick and his breakout and how he may factor in to the future here for the Fish. And lastly, I almost forgot that I had not talked about it on the episode. I did the write-up on justbaseball.com, but I also went to the Jupiter Hammerheads low A game against the Tampa Tarpons, which is the Yankees low A affiliate. I unfortunately did not get to see some of the Marlins players that I wanted to see. I wanted to see Osiris Johnson, Nas Nunez, but I did get to see Bennett Hostetler make his debut for the Fish, and I have some interesting thoughts on him. I did get to see Jason Dominguez, and I know he doesn't play for the Marlins, but I can give some thoughts on him because I thought it was intriguing to see Jason Dominguez. I saw Yuri Perez. He didn't even pitch. He was just walking around, and that was enough to just be mesmerizing for me. He looked like he was on stilts. And then I also have some legitimate notes on Victor Mesa Jr. and some other guys that stood out. And again, you can get that right up at justbaseball.com. All of that coming up in a moment. Before I get there, a reminder that this episode is brought to you in part by Stat Hero. Do you know that 85% of people who play daily fantasy sports lose? Yeah, I'm part of that 85%. And is it really that surprising? The game is rigged against you. You're playing against thousands of other lineups, not to mention experts who have more tools and more time. You don't stand a chance. Introducing Stat Hero, which is the first ever daily fantasy sports book that puts the player in control and winning within reach. Here's how it works. Stat Hero shows you their lineups and dares you to beat them. It's you versus the house in a head-to-head fantasy matchup. Your name, your stakes, winner take all. You have the advantage. Stat Hero is showing you their lineups ahead of time. No one else does that. You can literally see what Stat Hero's lineup is going to be and then make yours accordingly. It sounds like it doesn't make sense, but it's pretty crazy. You also are in total control. Stat Hero is the DFS that it is meant to be. That's how DFS should be. One-on-one. Play Stat Hero now and change the odds. Go to stathero.com/lockedon to sign up for free right now, and you can get 3x back on your first play. They're giving you a 300% match. That's unheard of. by just going to stathero.com/lockedon. 300% match for stathero.com/lockedon. Also brought to you in part by our friends at Built Bar. You know they've got so many delicious flavors, literally a flavor for everybody. And did you even know that Built Bar is the official protein bar for the U.S. track and field team? But they have flavors like coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. As you know, my favorite is mint brownie. They're all 17 to 18 grams of protein, and calories range from 130 to 180 calories, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, all amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. And if you go to built.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order of Built Bars. Go to built.com, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order of Built Bars. You won't regret it. Let's talk some Miggy Rowe, and then let's talk some Peyton Burdick, and then let's talk a little bit about my experience in Jupiter, where it was cool. I mean, you really get to see everything, because I started in the press box just because I wanted to charge my computer and do some write-ups while I was watching. And then once I got my computer to 100% and I realized, like, okay, why am I in this press box when I could just go down and watch the game? I went down to the first row, and Gary Denbo was like right to my left. And I was literally just sitting there with my laptop right in the first row, just writing notes and doing the write-up on the players. It was a really cool experience. You don't really get to do that in many minor league parks. It's unfortunate. I wish Jupiter had a better draw, because the stadium is great. The area is really nice. It's just really charming and feels like a nice minor league spring training environment. And I'm surprised that they don't draw better, given the area that it's in and the stadium and just everything included. But it is a really cool experience and worth going to for those who live in South Florida. But I'll get to that on the other side after I talk about Burdick and Miggy Rowe. You probably heard the other side there and you're like, oh no, not another ad. Nope, just talking about Miggy Rowe here. So it might be an advertisement in terms of the rest of the league, because I feel like I'm always trying to sell Miggy Rowe. I don't know if it's just one of those things where you cover a team and you always are going to feel like you appreciate a player a bit more than the people who don't cover that team or don't watch that team. But I just don't see how Miguel Rojas is not considered in that upper tier of shortstops. I'm not saying put him with Seager and put him with some of those other players like Correa, but I think he's right in that second group. I really do, and I think the Fangraphs WAR will back that up also. You look at WAR since the beginning of the 2020 season, where Rojas really put it together, and he's done it for a prolonged enough stretch here between the breakup of 2020 and now 2021, where I think you can legitimately count on him being this player moving forward for the next couple years. The WAR numbers are pretty impressive, and this is among the same, if anything, Rojas has played less games than the aforementioned players. Rojas has a WAR of 4.4, dating back to the beginning of last season. That's not even 162 games. So imagine a season of 4.4 WAR that is spectacular. Guys that are below that at the shortstop position, Bo Bichette, he checks in with a WAR of 4. That's largely because of the fact that he can't play defense at all. He rakes, absolutely rakes, but he can't play defense. You got Francisco Lindor with a 3.6 WAR over that stretch. So Miggy Rowe, almost a full win better than Lindor since the beginning of 2020. And then Javi Baez, 1.9 WAR according to Fangraphs going back to 2020. That's that middle infield for the Mets when healthy, and Miggy Rowe is almost outdoing them by himself. So that's definitely a good sign. You look at a bunch of the other shortstops. I mean, Didi Gregorius has been out, but even when he's healthy, I think he's one of the more overrated shortstops in baseball, and I think a lot of the numbers would back that up. Rojas should be in that top 12, top 10 shortstop conversation, and maybe he is. Maybe I'm missing it, but I think he's legitimately inside of the top 10. He's consistent. He's having one of the best defensive seasons we have seen from Rojas in his career, and also he might not win the Gold Glove because of Brandon Crawford, and you know there's just those guys that are always going to take it, but I would say Rojas is a finalist again, and there's got to be some sort of value to the fact that he is always at the top of the league in defensive WAR and a lot of defensive metrics. He is just so valuable. valuable. And then this year, he's already set a career high in stolen bases. And I think last night, I don't know if you caught it, but it's a perfect example of why Rojas is able to steal bags. He's an average runner. But what's the one thing that really stands out beyond the glove of Miggy Rowe and the leadership, of course, is that he is a smart player. He's a very smart player, and he knows what pitches to steal on. And he has done a great job of that this year. 11 stolen bases this season. That's a career high. He could finish the year with 15 bags, maybe more than that. He could encroach on 20. I think he'd finish just short. But to have 15, 18 bags in today's game, that's well above average. And what Miggy Rowe does is what he does at the plate. He is really smart. He waits pitchers out, and he waits for that breaking ball. And he'll know, okay, I'm going to run on that breaking ball. If it's in the dirt, or even if it's a strike, tough pitch to throw me out on, more time to run. And that's why he's had that success. I mean, 11 bags is great. A 2.8 WAR just this season alone is fantastic. And now, even after a slow start and in and out of the lineup at times, his WRC plus is up to 107. It was at 142 last year. So he continues to be an above average hitter with the plus-plus defense that he brings at shortstop. And now, you know, savvy base running, a lot of pluses that he brings across the board, some that meet the box score, some that don't. And I just don't see how anybody can consider him. As I talk about it more and more, I'm like, maybe top eight shortstop. Like, I know you start going through the shortstops and you're like, is he better than this guy? Is he better than this guy? Like, maybe not. I'm not going to say he's better than Bo Bichette, but is he not just as valuable? It's a unique spot there, and he has an option for $5.5 million next year. Like, that's got to be picked up, right? You're not finding a better shortstop than Miguel Rojas. You're not, because unless you're going to pay Trevor Story $300 million, or you're going to pay, and I don't think he gets that much, but that's a little bit hyperbolic, but unless you're going to pay Trevor Story, who's going to make $26, $27 million next year minimum, and then you also have Corey Seager, who's going to make $26, $27 million minimum next year, and then Carlos Correa, who's going to make the same thing next year, how about Miggy Rowe for 5.5? Now you allocate that money elsewhere, and I know he's not quite the caliber of those players, I guess, in terms of what he can do offensively and the superstar power there. But honestly, Miggy Rowe for 5.5, like, give me that any day of the week. And I think Miggy Rowe can do what he's doing for 2 to 3 more years, no problem. And then at 35, 36, maybe you transition him to another position, to a super utility role. He'll still be incredibly valuable. So I'm not too concerned about how he ages. I know he's 32, but Miggy Rowe for 2-3 more years at shortstop is more than fine for me. I think he will continue to be this guy. And if this is your shortstop, are you really upset? I mean, the shortstop position is not why the Marlins are struggling. It's everything else. And I think you could win a lot of games, and you can be a playoff team with Miggy Rowe at shortstop if you build around him properly. And I think Jazz Chisholm's better off at second base anyways at this point, especially with his injury issues, a little bit less demanding at second base. And I think, you know, the defense, he needs some more reps at shortstop, so moving back and forth makes it tough. But right now, I mean, with what Miggy Rowe does defensively, the drop off to Jazz would be even more pronounced, and I think that's something that stands out. Where I think the Marlins could upgrade, and I know I've been a big pay BA guy, but now as I continue to see him get hurt the last few years, and then he comes back and it just takes a little bit to get going again. He's inconsistent. I love the defense, but third base is a premium offensive position. And if you're going defense first at shortstop, even though Miggy Rowe's been pretty productive offensively, you could maybe look at the free agency market at third base and look at some options there. That's where you maybe could go outside the box a little bit. And then, of course, we know what the outfield brings and the catching position, where there's some obvious upgrades there. But I think offense is too much of a importance at third base. So we'll see how the Marlins approach that. But I mean, they've been pretty non-committal to Brian Anderson, so that might kind of give the writing on the wall there for the Fish. But I want to talk about Peyton Burdick, and I'll talk more about third base and the future of that and all of that situation as we get closer to the offseason. But with Burdick, he has been nothing shy of spectacular, just nothing shy of it. And when you look at his recent output, not just over the last week, I'm talking over the last couple weeks, he has been a guy that looks like he figured it out. He really looks like a guy that figured it out. The swing and miss was always a concern, and I was also concerned with the pull rate. He was out and around a lot. It seemed like he was trying to catch everything out in front of home plate, which is going to contribute to that swing and miss even more. But I now see him as a guy that attacks the right pitches, and he's been much better at spoiling pitches when he's behind in the count with two strikes, staying alive, not trying to hit the crap out of the ball on every single pitch. He gets his swings in the leverage counts, but he also knows that he can hit the ball with authority without swinging out of his shoes and without trying to yank it. And he's done just that. You look at his numbers over the last 12 games, he has been absurd. 375, 510, 825 slash line. Yeah, that's a 1335 OPS. He also has a 250 WRC plus over that stretch. He is walking as much as he struck out. 11 walks, 11 strikeouts. I mean, that's all positives, all good things. And I think what's really helped him with the approach has been the fact that he's been hitting towards the front of the lineup a bit more. We've seen Burdick a little bit in the leadoff spot, a lot more in the two spot, and I like that. I saw a recent game, they had Burdick leadoff and Conine second. I mean, you're forced to pitch to Burdick there. You're forced to give him more heaters, and he's another one of those candidates that I think would really thrive in the leadoff or two spot. I think he's more of that modern-day leadoff hitter with how much he walks, because he walks a ton. I mean, we talk about the on-base percentage. He's been among the league leaders in walk rate throughout the entire season in AA. So even when he was hitting in the low 200s, like 205, now he's up to 221, I believe, he was still getting on base at a well above 300 clip, like right in the 360, 370 range at times. And you look at Jonathan India. Jonathan India is a guy that doesn't provide even a fraction of the power that Peyton Burdick does, but India walks a ton, and it takes a lot of pressure off of his hit tool. I think that that's something we can count on here with Peyton Burdick. He's going to provide the power. He's going to provide the speed. And at this point, I don't think it's crazy to be feeling better about Peyton Burdick than J.J. Bleday. I still think it's insane that Baseball America dropped J.J. Bleday to 10 in their top prospect rankings for the Marlins. I think it's definitely knee-jerk, as I said in previous podcasts, but with Burdick really swinging it like he has and already was putting up better numbers, brings more athleticism, brings a little bit more to the table than Bleday, at the end of the day, you got to look at the two. They're about the same age, and you got to be feeling a little bit better now about Burdick, especially with the amount that he's walking, the athleticism to fall back on, the fact that he can play up the middle, whereas Bleday is limited to a corner. Like, this is interesting here on in terms of the projection of Burdick and how things can change a little bit as you go. I still think that's more of a testament to Burdick's performance and athleticism than to just drop Bleday out of the top nine prospects. But I will say I'm also getting a bit concerned with Bleday here. I need to see till the end of the season. If these struggles continue, like I don't see any flashes of light by the end of the season, then yeah, I think you can start dropping them to 10. So maybe you could argue that Baseball America is just getting out in front of it and they really feel confident about it. But I just need to see a bit more before I'm dropping a guy of J.J. Bleday's stature in terms of what he's been able to do. But you got to be excited about Peyton Burdick and, of course, even Griffin Conine, too. And you look at the numbers, Burdick hitting towards the front of the lineup would be something that I think will help him a bunch in the big leagues. And I think he is a really valuable guy in that regard with his approach. And the numbers this year, by the way, when he hits leadoff, he is hitting 243, 391, 466 as an 857 OPS and 128 plate appearances in the leadoff spot. When he bats in the two hole, he is slashing 237, 379, 557. That's a 936 OPS. It's buoyed by more home runs there because I think he's probably trying to do a little bit more damage. But I like in the leadoff spot how much he walks. So I like him in either of those two spots. You look at him in the three and four hole. Smaller sample size. Combined between those two spots, he only has just over 50 plate appearances, whereas in the one and two hole, he has almost 290 plate appearances between the two. But even his limited at-bats in the 3 and 4 hole throughout the season has been enough to drop his average quite significantly, because if you were just combining his at-bats in the leadoff and in the 2 spot, he'd be a 240 hitter right now with a 385 on-base percentage. Instead, he's more in the 220 range because of those 53 plate appearances and 48 at-bats where he went 7 for 48 in the 3 and 4 hole. That's not going to fly. And then 0-for-3 in one game in the five hole. He is not as comfortable there. And I think it's just because of the fact that he gets pitched to so differently. I like Burdick in a spot where he sees more heaters and guys don't want to put him on because of the speed he brings and the players behind him. They've got Conine batting behind him in the two hole in some games, or Burdick's batting second and Conine's batting three. You're not just going to walk him to have to face Conine. And that's clearly what's, I think, helped in part as of late. I definitely think that that's played a part in it. I think they've provided protection for each other in AA so far since Conine's been called up. I do think that that has helped as well, especially given how bad Pensacola has been offensively. They've been one of the worst offensive teams in AA, so I don't think people were nervous to pitch around Burdick a little bit, or to just not have to pitch to him. Point blank, period. I think that's why he was walking so much too, is that you don't have to give in to Burdick when everybody behind him is not hitting whatsoever. I mean, even when Burdick was hitting in the 190 range, he was the only guy that was really consistently hitting for power for Pensacola. So I really do think having Conine in the fold there and the power that he brings has changed a little bit of how Burdick is getting pitched to, and I think that's why we're seeing him more in the front of the lineup. But to wrap up real quick, I wanted to talk about my takeaways, and I couldn't remember if I mentioned this on a previous episode, so I'm sorry if I did, but I'll just rehash some of the quick takeaways, and you can also read it at justbaseball.com. But my takeaways from that low A matchup between the Tarpons and the Hammerheads. So Palacios, he does not throw fast at all, and we knew that. But wow, it was not fast. His command is really good, I will say that. And I was impressed by the command, but he was really topping out at 88. I had the active StatCast numbers coming in on my computer. And yeah, I mean, every fastball he threw was registering on StatCast as a changeup, which is kind of a troll. But that was also making things tough because he was throwing a changeup also, which was more in the 81 range, 82 range. But it was hard. I'd have to check the velo every time, not the pitch, because of the fact that everything was reading as a changeup. And then the slider, it was more slurvy, was a pretty good pitch. He located stuff well. But I mean, you're not going to be able to find success throwing 86 with that kind of soft stuff. But he does locate so well that he has been effective in low A. I just don't see how it works at the upper levels. That being said, he K'd Jason Dominguez twice. I think Dominguez's swing from the right side is way behind his swing from the left side, and his swing from the left side still needs some work too. And that's all I'll say on Dominguez, is I can see how special he could possibly be with how physical he is. I mean, he looks like a bodybuilder. I almost think it's too much upper body strength. He lacks a little bit of mobility. He's fast straight line speed wise, but he doesn't move that well agility wise, and I have some concerns whether he can stick in center. Like, there's a lot of moving parts here, and by moving parts in his swing, but there's also a lot of moving parts to just Dominguez in general. He's 18, he's gonna have plenty of time, but like, let's slow our roll here a little bit with Dominguez, because he has a long way to go. I'd be surprised if he gets above low A at any point down the stretch here, and I think he might even start the season next year in low A. That's how behind I think he is hit tool wise. If we thought Marlins fans were bad with Brinson, just imagine what Yankees fans would be like if Dominguez didn't pan out. But I think he can easily pan out. I'm not saying he's not going to. It's just insane to give some of the comps that we've given, and I haven't, but that we've seen given on Dominguez, because the reality is, at the same age, Wander Franco was way more advanced. At the same age, Julio Rodriguez was way more advanced. I think this is a little bit of a Yankee effect, but I digress there. I want to mention quickly, Victor Mesa Jr. really stood out to me. I know the numbers would not suggest that he is doing fantastic, but everybody I've talked to, when I have talked about spring training or instructs or the, of course, low A so far, everybody tells me, man, Mesa can swing it. He can really swing it. And I went into the game watching, and there's definitely some inconsistencies with his lower half. He struggles to stay back. I saw him, you know, lunging out on that front leg on occasion. He also really struggles left on left because of that forward movement, because at times he struggles to stay on the ball with his front hip and front shoulder. But I think that's all stuff that's going to be worked out, right? He's incredibly young. The bat speed is legit. The swing is really pretty, especially when he stays back. And I got a taste of that because in his first at bat, he was ahead 1-0 and sat back on a changeup and smoked it 107 miles an hour into right field. You could see the speed too. I think he's quick enough to stick in center as long as he continues to improve on his routes. He's incredibly young, but I was really impressed with the bat speed. Once that lower half is ironed out, I think that he easily has 15 to 20 home run power, maybe even a little bit more than that, depending on how much he fills out. We'll see how the speed continues, but could be a really interesting above average power, above average speed guy who hits from the left side. There's some value to that, no doubt about it. And I was really impressed with the bat speed. I think there's room for even plus power there if he continues to develop. And then a couple other guys. I really like the way Hostetler plays. I think he's a grinder, and he could end up being one of those candidates that climbs through the minor leagues quickly because of how gritty he is. He is tough to strike out, above average speed, really good athlete. He was intriguing to me. as well. And even Federico Polanco, I saw some bat speed there. There's definitely something there. I don't know how good he could be, but I see something budding there, and I'm going to keep my eye on Polanco as well. I wish I could have seen more players. Unfortunately, a lot were out in that ball game, but I will definitely get back there very soon when I get a chance to watch some more guys. I really do want to see Yuri Perez because, I mean, he has just been otherworldly. I can guarantee he will be on JustBaseball.com's top 100 prospect list. Right now, we're just trying to figure out how high to put him because I don't want to come off as a homer, but you look at the pitch data. I talked to my whole staff about it, and they're all like, no, I'm like, you're not being a homer here. Like, this pitch data is ridiculous. His stuff's ridiculous in terms of how it projects. You look how physical he is, how easy he repeats his mechanics for a guy that could play center and would be one of the tallest guys on the Heat right now. I mean, that's definitely a very impressive skill set to have. So a lot to be excited about, I think, in the Marlins system. And I think Perez is going to be a guy that quickly rises if the Marlins want to be more aggressive with him. They don't need to be, but definitely quickly rises through the prospect rankings. As always, thank you for listening. And by the way, if you get a second, check out my new podcast with Jeff Conine. It's really Jeff Conine's podcast. I'm just happy to be a part of it with him. But Outside the Box with Jeff Conine, go check that out. Really excited about some of the episodes we have there and a lot of really fun Marlins stories on that end of things. But thank you for listening to Locked On Marlins, as always. And I look forward to talking Marlins with you tomorrow.